Hi, welcome back to the podcast. I know it's been a while since we've done one, but today we're going to cover a very serious subject. And this subject is on suicide. This is something when I had my own benzo group that we really never put it out there publicly because I knew the effect that it had on others, even the effect that it had on me. But with the internet and with our Facebook groups, there is a Facebook group for people who have passed away. It's time that we talk about it. So today we're going to be interviewing Debbie Wagner, whose son Jonathan committed suicide, and she has a foundation. It's You're Not Alone, Jonathan Wagner Foundation. It's ynabenzo.org. And if this will trigger you, which I'm sure it will, depending on where you are in your withdrawal recovery, we really want to ask you to have your family members, your practitioners, social workers. This is who this show is for. We want them to listen to a mother who has lost her son, and the only reason he lost his life was because he was prescribed a drug and never warned about no informed consent, no idea of withdrawal. So I want to thank you for listening, and please, if this is too sensitive a subject for you, let somebody else listen for you. Let your family, let your friends hear that this is a serious subject. And please stay and listen to the post show afterwards also. Thank you very much. Hi, Debbie. I am so glad to have you on the show today. And I want to thank you for being so brave and speaking out about this very serious problem. On May 5th, it was the third year anniversary since your son Jonathan's suicide. Can you first tell me a little bit about Jonathan so that we can all have an idea of who he was prior to being prescribed a benzodiazepine and which one?
Yes. Well, hi, Geraldine. How are you? Good. All right. Jonathan was prescribed Klonopin to sleep when he switched shifts at his job. He worked at a casino and he went on a later shift. And he was getting home at 4 o'clock in the morning and he couldn't fall asleep. So we went to the family doctor. Family doctor gave him Klonopin, which we were unaware what it even was. We thought it was just a sleeping pill to help him go to sleep at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it's terrible. And so prior to this, when Jonathan had the shift change, what was he like?
Oh, Jonathan, he was your blonde-haired, blue-eyed, all-American kid. Everybody loved Jonathan.
I saw a picture of him. Beautiful, handsome boy. Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
And when he was given that, again, you had no idea, he had no idea. Did he start feeling a little different? Did he notice any physical changes? Because he was only taking it for sleep.
Right. He was just taking it on the days he worked because he worked 4/10s. And then he wouldn't take it on his 3 days off. He was only taking it on the nights that he worked. And then after a few weeks or so, he was feeling funny and the doctor had him start taking it every night. And then Jonathan was just taking it every night to go to sleep.
Was he at the point he could no longer sleep without it?
I'm not sure because I think he took it every, because even in the medical records, you could see where the doctor tells him to start taking it every night. And so I think Jonathan just took it every night. He didn't think twice about it. He didn't think anything. So the doctor said, just take it. Because I'm almost positive after the few weeks, 4 months, whatever, that he was only taking it on his days that he worked. On the other 3 days, he was starting to probably go through withdrawals from it.
Right.
And so the doctor said, just take it every night. So I think Jonathan just took it every night.
Right. So now as he's taking it every night, what's happening with his health? Things are starting to change because I know the doctor eventually is going to prescribe more medication for him, correct?
Yeah. The doctor, if I actually pulled his timeline and everything with the doctors, I'd have exact dates. But then, the doctor put him on something else, because I guess Jonathan, I'm not even sure if he was feeling. God, it's hard to say, because he had him on. I don't even remember the name of the something else. He put him on to like calm him down or something, but it was a side effect of Klonopin.
Right. It's going to be a drug for a drug for a drug.
Right.
What happened to him, which happens to most of us.
Right. Right.
It's awful. So when he started to have all these problems, and now months are going by, you notice, he notices, your husband, Tom, notices, but is the doctor at any point noticing anything wrong with him?
No, he thinks Jonathan's just having anxiety or depression. So that's why they had him on the other one. What was it? Oh God, I think it was, I can't even remember the name of it. There were so many medications.
Right. I know. So I know you were trying to help him, but I think I don't even know the answer to this. At the point you contacted me and he had passed away, at any point, had you realized prior to, or you didn't find out till after his suicide, that it was the drugs all along?
No, we found out that Jonathan actually found out he was in benzo withdrawals.
Oh, okay.
So it was actually Jonathan, when Jonathan had decided in November that he did not want to take a sleeping pill to go to sleep, and he stopped it, then all hell broke loose.
Okay.
So when he stopped it, he went into, it didn't take more than 3 days of him off of that. He had anxiety, he had depression. And so we went to the doctor, and the doctor said he was just having anxiety, and put him on something else, and never asked if Jonathan was still taking the Klonopin. Never asked us. He just put him on something else. Well, he actually, what he put him on was Xanax.
Oh, so he puts him on a shorter acting benzo.
Right. He put
takes him from the longer, puts him on the shorter. Okay.
Right. He didn't even ask about the Klonopin, nothing. He said, Jonathan, you're having anxiety, and he put him on the Xanax. Well, Jonathan, it probably was not even a week. Jonathan he literally was going through the Xanax like it was Pez candy.
Right.
Because he couldn't get back up to where the Klonopin was. So we went back to the doctor. The doctor said, oh, no, Jonathan, you're just having anxiety. And he gave him more Xanax. And then we're like, all right, now Jonathan's starting to have depression. He's starting to walk around crying. He's got anxiety. He's got everything going on. His body is shaking. So we go back to the doctor. Doctor says, sitting in his stool. And he turns and he just looks at us. He hands Jonathan a prescription for 90 Xanax and says, there's nothing I can do for you. You're in Xanax withdrawals.
So now he realizes that he's in Xanax withdrawal, but never realized what he did to him with the Klonopin.
Never put it together. Never.
And so November is when Jonathan wanted off of the pill. So and he dies in May. So between November and May, I can't imagine what was going on in your household. Is he even able to work?
Jonathan ended up going on a leave of absence from work. And then Jonathan was on an intermittent. He was on a leave of absence for a couple weeks, a few weeks. And he wasn't, he thought he was okay. I'm getting better. I'm better. And then he'd go back to work. He would make a few hours at work because he would call me from work crying. And I'd say, just come home. He had intermittent at that point, so he would come home. I would have to talk to him all the way home him home from work to our house.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, I understand that.
Yeah, he couldn't drive. He couldn't he couldn't keep it together. So he would come home. Jonathan went on leave of absence a few times from work.
Right.
In this period of time. Most of the time he did not make more than 4 hours at work.
Yeah, I can't imagine how he ended the four, because he went from a long acting, cold turkey, then the doctor puts him on a short acting Xanax, and he's probably metabolizing it very fast and it's just going through him. So at what point did you understand? I mean, so you said he wanted off. Did he go online? Did he find out anything?
No.
The fact is, nothing.
Jonathan just says he didn't want to take a sleeping pill no more, so Jonathan just stopped taking it.
Right.
Within 3 days, that's when it all happened. That's when we went back to the doctor. He put him on Xanax, went back, put him on Xanax. Now Jonathan's panicking. He's going to think I'm a drug addict. I says, you've had this doctor 20 years. He's not going to think. He's our family doctor. He knows. And he even said, no, Jonathan, we golf together. I know. And when the last time he gave Jonathan the prescription for 90 Xanax and said he was in Xanax withdrawals and gave us a phone number to a psychiatrist in Munster. And
did that psychiatrist help? Did you go there?
Yeah, we went to him. Jonathan actually came home, and because Jonathan and my youngest son, Jason, they had moved back in the house, thank God, a year before that. Jonathan was just running his house out. And so thank God Jonathan was living here with us. Yeah. Jonathan came down the stairs and he looked at us. He says, I'm in benzodiazepine withdrawals. And we said, what? He goes, I'm in benzo withdrawals. And that's when we started. And that's when four of us were locked in this house on Google and everything else, trying to figure out what was going on. And right. That's how Jonathan actually found out he was in benzo withdrawals. And then we start Googling. And I mean, Google was the only person we can go to. Then we did go to the psychiatrist that our family doctor sent us to.
Right.
He put Jonathan on all kinds of medicine. Oh. All kinds. I think Depathol was one.
Probably Depakote.
Yeah, something like that. He put him on so many medicines. At that point, we had gone to him. I remember it was like January 2nd. Mm-hmm. At that point, he told Jonathan that he had to go into drug classes. He had to go to like the AA type class, stuff like that, his drug classes.
Right.
Now, these were
the last place he needed to be.
Yeah, $500 a meeting. And he wanted Jonathan in there like 2-3 times a week.
Yeah.
And so Jonathan went, and then Jonathan went a second time. The third time, the one guy in there told Jonathan to just say he was a drug addict. And Jonathan stood up and said, I will never say I'm a drug addict. My doctor did this to me.
Good for him.
And
good for him.
He put a fit there. He was with people that were, you know, heroin addicts, everything. And finally, after like the third one, maybe they didn't make Jonathan go back in there. He still had to go through a P test.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, oh no. Okay, Jonathan, you don't have to go in there, because Jonathan refused. And he stopped the whole class and said he refused to say he was a drug addict. And so then we went to that psychiatrist, and Jonathan asked him, should I be tapering off, because he got back on Klonopin.
He did. Okay.
Yes.
But who put him back on the Klonopin? This psychiatrist that the doctor sent you to?
The psychiatrist put him back on the Klonopin.
Okay.
And he had him on like 2 or 3 other medicines with it. And Jonathan said,
and what happened to the Xanax? Did he just take the Xanax away from him?
Well, no. At one point, he told Jonathan he could have as much Xanax as he wanted. He could eat it all day long if he wanted it.
You have, and this is from a psychiatrist.
He told Jonathan, because Tom went to that meeting, because Jonathan never went to him alone. We always went with him. And Tom was in that meeting, and he told Jonathan, you can eat all the Xanax you want. So Jonathan had free rein to all the Xanax that he wanted. Now, Jonathan never took anything. Jonathan wasn't that type of person. So this was not settling good with him. He had asked the psychiatrist, should he water taper or should he be shaving his pills? The psychiatrist had no idea what Jonathan was talking about. No idea. He looked at Jonathan, actually, and we were all in the room, and he says, what, are you afraid you're going to fry your brain? At that point, Jonathan decided he was not going back to this guy. Mm-hmm. So we call our family doctor. Well, now our family doctor cannot take Jonathan back because he has labeled him a drug addict.
The one who started it all calls him a drug addict.
Right.
That's great.
Got him labeled as a drug addict for Xanax. So we have to go back to the psychiatrist because we got to make sure we get this Klonopin to taper off of. So Jonathan was actually shaving his pills.
Okay.
I would sit at the table across from him, and Jonathan would shave his pills. You know, we would do like a week's worth. We would cut it down. We actually followed the Ashton manual. We had nowhere else to go. We followed the Ashton manual on it.
Okay.
And he was shaving his pills and everything, and he was getting down. I think he got down to, what is it, 0.05 in the Klonopin?
Probably for him he could have been at either 0.50 or 0.05. It depends where he got to, yeah.
Yeah, he got down. He got himself down, but it trust me, every single day it was, he'd wake up, he'd be crying. He'd have anxiety. He'd be in a ball. He'd be laying in a corner in a ball. We'd have to go get him up. Then it was depression, and then he'd be down here. His whole body was shaking. We didn't know at the time, but I think he was starting to have seizures. And it was a constant 24/7. It didn't end. And I remember I had gone to work, and we did not leave Jonathan alone. There was always somebody here with Jonathan 24/7. Never was left alone. Yeah.
This is something important because other families need to realize the importance of when somebody's telling you how bad they are, it's serious. And you as a family, you did the best thing you could for him.
If I can stress to everybody, do not leave him alone. Jonathan could not be left alone. There was always somebody here with Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I went to work. And my husband was at work and my youngest son was here and they called us up. It was on a Thursday and my husband called me and said, you need to get home now. And he goes, I'm on my way. Jason's got Jonathan. I'm like, what's going on? And he goes, get home. Well, time we got home, Jonathan was a mess. Absolutely.
And what month is this? Where are you at now from?
This is got to be March, somewhere around the beginning of April.
Okay.
Maybe, you know, end of March, beginning of April. It had to be somewhere around there. Well, we have a hospital in Chicago. It's called Rush. We tried getting Jonathan into Rush like 3 times, and they said we couldn't get him in because it was, you know, they had no openings, whatever. Well, that Thursday, my husband got home. I got home. Jonathan was sitting there. He had a backpack. He had literally a t-shirt in that backpack. And he says, you got to get me help. And I said, enough. We put him in the car. We drove him to Rush. And we took him through the emergency room. At that point, they had asked what was going on. We explained the whole thing, how the doctor put him on Klonopin. Actually, Rush Hospital said they didn't want any records. They wanted nothing. That actually what our family doctor did was wrong. And they're not ones to handle a benzo withdrawals, but they have had benzo withdrawals, severe and mild cases. So they ended up putting Jonathan in the psych ward at Rush. And the last Klonopin Jonathan had was the night we took him to Rush. They gave him a half of a Klonopin. And that was the last Klonopin Jonathan ever had. And they put him in there. They started him on other medications. They had him talking. They were real nice. Jonathan could go out there and say, can you give me all the information on this medication you have me on? And they said, yes. If he asked, they told him. They put him on like antidepressants or something to help him get through. They said he had actually tapered himself down far enough on the Klonopin that they were not giving him Klonopin anymore. They were not giving him any benzos.
But where's this? And the Xanax was also gone at this point, Debbie?
Yes. The Xanax, okay. Jonathan stopped taking the Xanax way before that. He stopped taking that in January. He didn't even.
Did he do that cold turkey?
We had bottles. Yes. Wow. We had a bottles of Xanax here because the psychiatrist had him on so much medicine, Jonathan couldn't even function anymore. He said either he felt like he was in a cloud, he'd be crying, he'd be in a ball. It was nobody knew. Nobody knew to how to keep him tapering off of this. Jonathan was trying to figure it out. We were trying to figure it out. We were using the Ashton manual. Time we were using the Ashton manual and tapering Jonathan off the Klonopin, the Xanax was already out of the picture.
Okay.
So that was already gone. Rush kept him in there for a week. Jonathan got out. When he got home, he said he felt good. He said it's the best he's felt in a while. And then the one medicine, he started having a reaction. So we called back up there because then he was assigned like a psychiatrist that we went to see every like 4 or 5 days. And so we went and they tried another medicine. And Jonathan, it didn't work. He was getting sick off of it. And then I think they tried something else. And at that point, Jonathan was like, I'm tired of taking medicine. I'm tired of this. And we went right before Jonathan died. We went on, what was it, on Thursday? We went to Rush. He asked the psychiatrist if he could stop taking all the medicine, if he could just stop. And he was only on one medicine at that point. And she went and she talked to the other doctors and they came back and they agreed that Jonathan could stop taking all the medicines, the one medicine he was on, but he had to come every 3 days to the Rush. So we said, yes, we agree. Well, that was Thursday. Friday, Jonathan killed himself.
That was Thursday and Friday?
Yes.
So sorry. I'm so sorry the medical profession failed your whole family. Now, you know, it's funny. As you're telling me that you took him to Rush, do you know since Jonathan's death, I get, because I can see who's ordering the Ashton manual, I started noticing that we were getting orders from Rush. Like, wow, one doctor, another doctor, a nurse practitioner. Now I think it's probably because of Jonathan that they're learning more.
Well, as when Jonathan died and we started the foundation, one thing in this foundation that we do, we have sent out mailers. And we sent them out, say, to a 30-mile radius of my house, which is like 15,000 right. mailers. And right. we sent them to all the doctors, nurse practitioners, heads of the hospital, anybody in the doctor's office. And so we've sent out a lot of mailers, postcards on benzos.
Yeah. So now I didn't know that he had gone to Rush. So I think those mailers have done a lot of good. In fact, I was going to say, when you first contacted me just a few months after Jonathan's suicide, you wanted to get involved in bringing awareness. And now you have the organization called You're Not Alone, Jonathan Wagner Benzodiazepine Awareness Foundation. So I'm going to mention the website, which is ynabenzo.org, if anybody wants to go to that website and look around. So can you tell us what the organization does, aside from doing the flyers, and about, I know you do fundraising benefits?
We do benefits. Like this year, with the coronavirus, we're basically stuck. We're not going to be able, because we were actually setting up a concert for this benefit. But we do benefits. We try to get as much money so we can help people that are in need of it. We've mailed out checks to people in benzo withdrawals that could not pay
yes.
their bills.
Yeah. Because in fact, I know you helped somebody at Christmas time. It was a single mom who's still very sick. She was on, I believe, 8 meds and cold turkey off for all 8, single mom with a son, and you were wonderful to her.
Well, that's what, because we, as a foundation, we looked at what we went through as a family. Now, we were your typical middle-class family that didn't even know what a benzo was. Right. There was nobody in our family is a drug addict. Nobody in our family was, you know, any kind of, had any addiction to pills, any, we had no idea. We were as pure as could be when it came to this.
Right.
So for us, we didn't understand what was going on. And if Jonathan and my youngest son, Jason, did not move back into this house a year before that, and they moved in because we were starting a food truck. It was Jonathan's idea. Right. We had got a food truck built and we were going into business, and that was Jonathan wanted to save money to be able to run the food truck. So they moved in and he rented out his house. Now, if he did not move in here, he would have lost everything. Jonathan could not keep his job. He kept his job, but he was not functioning as a normal person.
Right.
He was on leave of absence. He was leaving work. He would have never been able to afford his bills. So we, as a foundation, we understood that a whole lot. So we try to help people that we understand they can't go out, they can't work, they can't pay their bills. They're not eating proper.
Right. Yeah. So Debbie, 1 year I could see online, I could see the benefit. And I think it was it your sister or sister-in-law was going around showing everything. And I'm thinking, is there any way online we could, you know, I mean, you could donate, but I found it very interesting that here I am up in, you know, Boston, Massachusetts, and I could see what was going on down in Indiana. Can people, when you can do a benefit again, can they participate?
Yes. We're as a foundation, we have a board, and we haven't been able to do anything with the coronavirus going on.
Right.
But we are having a meeting in 2 weeks about what we can do. Jonathan was an avid golfer. And so we had a golf outing that's actually set up for Saturday. but we can't have it because of the coronavirus. So for Jonathan's birthday, all the guys are trying to get it set up in September.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
Right. We're going over things about having an online auction for this year because everything's changed.
Right. That's a great idea.
We've got some of the politicians in our area behind us. And he actually just won something. I can give his name. Frank Mervan. Excellent. Yeah. Frank Mervan is behind us. Excellent guy.
So speaking of your politicians, at any point have you tried to file legislation in your state of Indiana?
No.
Not yet. Okay.
I'm not sure who I had talked with about filing it, but me as a 501c, I can't lobby against, I can't do that.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. You know, look at the foundation right now, I think is more important for you to run because there's other people in Indiana. One of the things, if people don't know, Jonathan's story was featured on Lisa Ling's This Is Life, Benzo Crisis, and his story was also featured on Dr. Oz. Can you tell me what it was like working on both of those shows? You know, because it was wonderful that you were able to get the word out on such a national level.
Yeah, Lisa Ling did an excellent job of, Lisa did a great job of getting out what benzos really are. It was outstanding working with Lisa. And Dr. Oz, he even admitted it, if you go back to his, that he didn't even know some about the benzos.
Wow.
And Lisa Ling, she didn't even know the extent of what it was.
Until it happened to her father.
Right. Right. And so Lisa, when we were filming here and we filmed the 3 days, she knew what we were talking about when we said certain stuff that Jonathan was doing because of her father.
Right.
And so, I mean, you know, Lisa has called me to just see how I'm doing and stuff like that. She's an outstanding lady. Outstanding.
Good. So one of the other things, because I know with your organization, you do so much good. You had recently told me how you and your husband, Tom, had flown out to help another young woman who was suffering. And I don't know if you want to mention her name, but can you tell me how it was getting to a family, you know, to help them to understand her suffering and how she is now? Because you guys flying out there made a big impact on her life and saving her.
Yeah, she doesn't care if I use her name. Her name is Minerva, and I had gotten a phone call, and it was this lady, and she was crying, upset, and she didn't know anything, and as it came down to it, she was exactly as my son. She was 35 years old. She was put on Klonopin to sleep, and she had stopped taking it, and she thought she was going crazy. Everything that Jonathan was going through, she was going through. And I asked her, how did you find me? And she found me off my website.
Wow.
And she just called, and she says, I don't even know how I found you, Debbie, but I found you. And so we built a relationship with her. And so I talk to her, you know, often, make sure she's doing okay. I also, when she first called, I knew what state she was in. I knew she was in no state to understand what was actually happening with her. So she had got her brothers. She's got an outstanding family. Her brothers and her parents are 100% helping her with her. Her sister-in-law is right there for her. And So we did, and I know she kept saying, I wanted to see you, I want to see you, I want to see you. So my husband and me decided we were going to fly out there. Now, we did not fly out there on the foundation money. We flew out ourselves. We left her some money to help her out through from the foundation. But that's what the foundation's for. And she's doing good. We finally found her a doctor. She's back on it. She's actually stable right now, but she will start tapering soon.
Okay, good. So it's just, I want people to hear more than anything how much having family support, if you don't have a lot of family, friends, that support is everything. And I don't want somebody to think if you don't have support, you can't make it, because we've had plenty. In fact, I'm hoping one of my Benzo friends will come on who had no support, and through myself and a few other people, she made it, and now she's thriving. So you have to surround yourself, go on these groups, do whatever you have to do to survive. You don't give up. So, Debbie, one of the main reasons that we're doing this show is to educate people, because benzos, it's such a sensitive subject. So my hope is that, I'm going to do a pre-warning. We've done the pre-warning on the show, and that we want family members and medical professionals who are listening to this show to learn, to hear what we're saying, and educate yourself. Is there anything that you could say if you were talking to a family member or a medical professional to get their attention, to help their client, their family member, or their friend?
Yes, first thing that I tell everybody that I talk to, doctors, people, everybody, do not stop taking it. Do not cold turkey yourself off of this medicine. Do not.
Excellent. Right.
You cannot cold turkey a benzodiazepine. This is, we learned this because we didn't know. Jonathan stopped taking it, and then it became he was back on it, off it, on it. He was so messed up. But I tell everybody, do not cold turkey off of a benzo. The doctors have to understand that taking somebody off of benzos does not mean cutting it in half.
Right.
That is not the way to taper off a benzo. Benzos, you must taper very slow off of them. Your body has to rebuild. Your body loses everything. And when the doctors, I try to tell, when you go in and you cut that in half, you have put them into withdrawals.
Correct.
You
That's right.
have got to take them off by such little amounts. I mean, we sat here with a razor blade and a $200 scale measuring.
Yeah.
And you can even see with Jonathan, even coming off that much, that we've learned a lot that we did not know. We did not know that when Jonathan started going back into really bad anxiety, depression, he should have been holding where he was. But Jonathan wanted off these pills so bad, he just kept tapering. Well, he didn't, his body needed time to level back out. And if he would have leveled out maybe a week or so, but we had no medical help. We had nobody helping us.
Yeah.
We're trying
I
to
mean, it's been years. I've been doing this for over 20 years. There's still such little help. We're doing it all for them. All the people who are victims of this, we've been doing it for them for years.
It's like how, why is it that you have sick people helping sick people?
Yeah.
How is that even make sense to anybody? Why aren't the doctors stepping up and taking more responsibility, learning? It's not that hard. You're going to put them on a benzo. Please don't keep them on a benzo more than 3 to 4 weeks. Please
Yeah.
monitor them.
Well, here's the thing too. I don't know if you've ever heard. We've had quite a few doctors going through our groups. They were clueless. In fact, one of the doctors that was an orthopedic doctor committed suicide. And I should have known that last phone call with him. Actually, I didn't know, because he said, Geraldine, I have a beautiful wife. I have a beautiful home, great kids, money. I have everything somebody would want. He goes, this, you know, he was going through Xanax withdrawal. He's like, I can't do this. And I kept telling him, John, just hang on, you know, but, and then I didn't hear from him. And then we found out. So even the doctors are clueless, but we've put so much information out in 20 plus years. How are they not at this point? You know, how do they not know?
How is it possible that Jonathan, who loved life, mm-hmm. he was loved literally by everybody. He didn't have a mean bone in his body. How is it possible that his doctor had no knowledge of this?
Right.
How?
So here's a question for you then, because how is it that this doctor had no knowledge and you've been doing so much in your state? And I don't know if you can answer this. Do you know? Well, now I know that I think Rush, at Rush, them ordering the Asha manuals is definitely a direct result of your mailings. Do you know if there has been any impact on fewer prescriptions? Although with the coronavirus, we hear that there's a 34% increase in anti-anxiety drugs, which is very upsetting, because now how many more people are going to wind up in our groups, you know?
And you're right. And that's what, when the whole coronavirus came out, that was one thing that I feared, that people were going to start going into depression, anxiety. They're going to go, they're going to get a Xanax. And it's one thing with what's going on right now, yeah, that I worry about for others.
Yeah, right. I worry too. In fact, I didn't realize one of my cousins was having terrible anxiety over the coronavirus. And then she called me and told me, and I actually told her about a specific homeopathic remedy to get. She ordered it in, and she called me. She's like, it's the first night I've slept. I'm not vomiting. I can't believe how much calmer I am. There are some wonderful natural things to calm people down, because once you take a benzo, you know, there you go. I mean, what happened to Jonathan? What happened to me? What happened to others? There is nothing to take sometimes. You just have to let the body repair, come off slowly. So, I mean, I can't tell you how much I appreciate how open your family has been to do all of this. And it's sad at the cost of your son's life.
It is very sad. Jonathan didn't deserve what happened to him.
No, he didn't. Because, you know, as much as you and I were in touch and you had sent me his picture, when I saw on Lisa Ling and you had the video of him suffering, that was very hard to watch. But that's the reality. So this is why we want medical professionals to watch her special, listen to what you're saying. I hope people will go on to your website. Again, it's ynabenzo.org, and contribute. Let your families contribute. Let your medical professionals contribute. You know, you need to be helping more and more people.
I think at this point, we just keep sending out like postcards, and they're big postcards, you know, like 4x8s or whatever. And mm-hmm. the more we send out, the more. The last one we sent out, our website got slammed.
Really?
And so it tells me somebody in that medical profession stopped to go look to see what benzos were.
That's right.
And if that's, you know, all this foundation does, it shows me that somebody in the medical profession is looking to see what it is.
Right. They're learning. So, you know, at the cost of years that we've lost, at the cost of others who have died by suicide, at the cost of families that are suffering, information is starting to get out there. But how sad that it's taken this long.
How sad is it? How many people's lives are upside down because their doctor gave them something they don't even know.
Right. Innocent.
And
I
take them off of it. How do you
no clue
somebody at Clonopin for 7 months?
Right.
For sleep.
Right. Yeah.
He just sleep when he got home at 4 a.m.
Right. Yeah. It's funny. My daughter, who's a nurse, when she was in the emergency department, she would do 2 weeks days, 2 weeks nights. So, which you know, I used to work in human resources. I don't even understand that shift, what that does to somebody's body. And she would say, you know, some of the nurses are taking, you know, a benzo. I'm like, you're never taking one. You know, you're just never going to take one. I'm like, you'll change your departments, which eventually she did.
Yeah.
And there was a nurse, a mother that spoke at a thing I was at one time. Her daughter, again, night nurse, couldn't sleep, given Ativan. And, you know, she's passed away at 28. So it's got to stop. People have to realize these are not, as they say, these are harmless, non-addictive. We give them out like candy. You can't use those terms anymore. These are potent drugs. They have their place, but people have to realize, you know, there are consequences that come when innocent people are taking these drugs and have no clue of what's happening to them. There needs to be informed consent, which is what we're working on here in Massachusetts. So, Debbie, is there anything else you want to add? Because I can't thank you enough for doing this show. It's something for years that when I had my group, we didn't talk about it. Whenever somebody died, when they committed suicide, we hid it because we knew the effect it had on others. But with Facebook, it's all over the place. There's even a group for anyone who's passed away. They put up this story. So we can't hide it anymore. And so it's best to talk about it so that families will be informed and help them.
All I can say is that if you have somebody going through benzos, you need to be with them 120%, 150%. You need to not leave them alone. I don't care how much they say they're fine. Do not leave them alone. I'll tell you, Jonathan was under 24/7 watch by us. Thursday, when we came home from rush, we got home about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. He said he was going to the gas station to get a donut and chocolate milk. I said, we have stuff here. I'll go with you. He says, no, 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 no. You know, we've had a long day at rush. No, no, no. Well, 10 minutes later, because the gas station is 1 mile away, 10 minutes later, I call him. Where are you? I'm on my way. I'm on my way. 10 minutes later, where are you, Jonathan? I'm on my way. I said, Jonathan, where are you? Why, it shouldn't be taking you this long. Well, we found out Friday when he shot himself, he was buying a gun then. That is how quickly it happens.
Right. Right.
He said he's going to get a donut and chocolate milk. He went to the gun shop and he bought a gun. And so that tragic. Was only 5 minutes that kid was out of our sight.
Right.
So I could just tell families, you stay with them. I don't care how much they say they're fine, they're okay. If they say they're going for cookies, you go with them. Go with them.
Right.
You know, I was like, all right, he's going 1 mile away. Well, 1 mile, look what happened.
Right.
So all I can tell family is you be there for them, because what our family has lived through without Jonathan has just basically devastated our family.
Right. And I know.
Like, it's something we can't... I still, to this day, cannot believe my son is gone.
Yeah. No, and it shouldn't have happened. It absolutely should not have happened. It was an iatrogenic illness he was given.
It should have never happened. It should never, ever have happened. Jonathan should still be alive. And he took somebody that loved life more than ever. And he killed himself.
Right.
Because of
so we can only hope that his death is going to save others. That's all we can hope. Your story, his life, what happened to him will save others from the same fate. Oh, Debbie, thank you. I know this was hard to do, and I just thank you so much for doing the show.
All right. You're welcome.
Okay.
Thanks, Jolene.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Garrett, we just finished a very serious podcast with Debbie Wagner, you know, and the subject is on suicide. And her son, Jonathan, was 36 when he passed away. And it's very tragic because it truly was an iatrogenic illness that was given to him. And it's so sad it shouldn't happen. But out of their grief, out of their pain, They've started this wonderful foundation to bring awareness. And it's hard to, you know, over the years, when I ran my group, I always hid when somebody committed suicide, because I know my first Benzo friend, when I started my Benzo group, there were 24 of us. And of the 24, one of them committed suicide. And I remember what that did to me. I think it set me back almost 6 months. It was like I couldn't function. I kept thinking, is that going to be me? And it's, you can't help but think it. If it happened to him, it's going to happen to me. So I think the reason we're doing this is because we've had others who attempted and failed and they went on to thrive. We've had some who obviously thought about it the whole time in withdrawal, like me. I thought about it, I would say almost every day, but I wouldn't have done it. But I, on the other hand, used to beg God to just take me at night, and I used to write goodbye letters to you kids. And it's a very emotional subject. In fact, even when Debbie and I were talking before the show, I started to cry. So I was glad I got through the show without crying. But we have young people, older people. It can happen to anyone. We've seen a lot of people over the years. You used to come in and hear messages left on our message machine from people that we thought were not going to make it. And thank God they did. You know, the information people are getting today is from people, you know, like me, you know, sufferers. I mean, you've met a lot of Benzo people over the years. You've been at the hearings when you've met these people, the desperation, or even at one of the hearings when one of the mothers got up whose son had committed suicide. It's tragic. It's got to stop.
So I think my question to you after hearing this podcast is, why is it, do you think, that people are committing suicide that have been put on benzodiazepines? Is it because they feel hopeless? Is it because of the symptoms, the iatrogenic illness that's caused by coming off of them? Is it a mix of the two?
I think I can answer that pretty easily, because let's say in opioid withdrawal, they know it's only going to last a couple of weeks. With benzos, we don't know how long it's going to last. Some people think, I can't do this. It's never going to stop. I'm permanently damaged. I hate to hear that word, permanently. They just don't know, because you've been chemically controlled. The body has got to get back to where it was. You have to start making your own GABA. And a lot of times the drugs have harmed other parts of the body. You know, for me, it harmed the gut. We also know genetically that when I had a DNA test on my liver, doesn't process things properly. So I got help through a functional medicine doctor. And I also, as Debbie said, I had family 24/7. And they weren't around me because there were times I know people were afraid that I was going to harm myself, but they were around me because I couldn't even be left alone. I had such intense fear inside my body. That's why I wanted to go. You can't, it's hard to handle the symptoms, but today we have so much more information, and unfortunately Jonathan wasn't getting it till the very end.
But again, we have so much more information today, but you have to find it yourself.
You have to
still.
Find it, because the doctors
aren't going to go to the hospital still today and have somebody hand you this and tell you there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Right, and you're also not going to get that informed consent. He wouldn't have taken the pill. I wouldn't have taken the pill. I know when we've had the hearings, every single person there said they wouldn't have taken it if they had informed consent. Now, we know here in Massachusetts, the doctors are fighting against any legislation. Mass Medical comes up against us. Why a simple paper for informed consent, I'm never going to understand.
I think it's probably worth mentioning, too, because we've been doing this for a couple of years on the legislation part. And so in public, they always send letters to the committee. They always show up, and they're against it. Now, in private, maybe not the head doctors that you see, but they admit to us, there's a problem here. But you'll never hear them say it in public.
No.
And that's a huge issue. So they know there's an issue, but they won't say it in public yet. Well, how many more years do we have to wait? How many more people have to get sick? How many more Jonathans have to commit suicide before they'll admit there's an issue?
Right. I don't know what can be done. Look at just her organization. We've got the Ashton Manual out there. There are websites out there. It's going on in every country. This isn't just like a United States problem. This is a huge international problem that we are all band together now. What is it that we can't get these doctors, just for them to get educated in it so that then they can educate their patients? It's that simple to stop the bleeding. One of the things Debbie and I talked about is during the coronavirus, I am very worried. A lot of us have talked about this, that the anti-anxiety drugs have gone up 34%. what is going to happen when this virus is over and you've got 34% more people on anti-anxiety drugs who were not informed.
Yeah.
We're in for a huge problem then. So, all right. Well, I think it was a very informative show. It's one that we want to be very sensitive about the subject. We want you to realize that you can recover from these drugs when you're giving the right information. You know, and just please be cautious. And no matter what you feel today, it's going to pass. I never thought it would pass. I never thought I would get well.
I think, too, before we end, it's worth mentioning Debbie's biggest piece of advice. And it was, you know, to be with the person coming off it 24/7, to be there for them 24/7. But I think what we've experienced in some of the other interviews, it's very difficult to get to that point where you can make somebody else understand what you're going through.
Right.
And the fact that I've been with you throughout your entire withdrawal, I still don't know exactly what it's like to go through it. So right. There are days that you can easily be frustrated with somebody and say, how could it still be going on now? Right.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So I do hope, you know, and what we've seen from our podcast numbers, when we put out interviews, people share them a lot. So you can see how much a podcast is shared. So I do hope that people use these to share them and
right.
show them what other people have gone through.
Right. Well, one thing I don't want people to be scared, if you do not have support, because, you know, there are people that have no family around them, very few friends, but we have the internet. You know, build your internet friends up. There is a lot of information out there. You know, ask a neighbor to help you. Ask someone. You know, you don't have to be alone in this. And we also, because of the ASHTA manual and the when people come online to get the information, they are starting to taper very slowly. Some are able to continue working. They're working. They start eating well. They're exercising. So, you know, when somebody's in a crisis like Jonathan, yes, 24/7 support. In fact, there was a book years ago that I happened to read. So this is like over 20 years ago when I was searching for information, somebody to help me, you know, because nobody understood it. And it's funny, I pulled it up today, the book, and I spoke to the author. The book was called The Great Anxiety Escape, A Revolutionary Program to Escape Anxiety, Insomnia, Depression, and Drug Dependency by Max Ricketts. And he was in the Philippines at the time. And he had tried to commit suicide and failed. So his family, I'll just sum the book up quickly. So the family literally surrounded him 24/7 to make sure he didn't try to harm himself again. So through, you know, vitamins and minerals and acupuncture.
How old is this book now?
Oh, well, so God knows when it was first printed. Let me see if it says it here, because I read it like 20 years ago. That was about the only help I could find that somebody got through it. They recovered. And I remember I actually called and I spoke to Max years ago. And so back then you just wanted to find somebody. Did you recover? And I liked what he said. And he said, I'm always recovering. And I thought, well, that's a weird thing to say. Why wouldn't he just tell me he's recovered? And he said, I protect myself. And so I will say this, because there are some people who get nervous. Oh, you know, am I ever going to be well? I say, you're probably going to be better than you ever were, but you protect your nervous system. So like when Dad was sick all that time, I had to protect my nervous system. So I had to make sure I was eating good at the time. I was trying to do deep breathing. I took some supplements that I like that are very calming to protect my nervous system. So now I understand what Max was saying. You know, I'm recovering. Like I tried.
He didn't mean it in the sense like AA uses.
No,
you're always
absolutely
in recovery.
Not. He protect because he was working, and that was a smart thing I see now years later. I wanted him to say, yeah, I'm fine, and I work, and blah blah blah. So I like what he said because it is true. I still protect myself at all times. Like if I go under extreme stress, I start taking stuff to feed my nervous system.
So you're always cognizant of the fact that you have a delicate nervous system.
Yeah, I'm high strung. We all know I'm high strung. I'm built differently than people.
And that's with or without the benzos.
That's with or without benzos. I was high strung. But I think it's important that people know, take care of yourself, build your nervous system up, you know, and this was a subject that needed to be talked about finally, you know, open and save your loved ones, because we don't want to see anyone else, you know, any other family go through what their family went through.
And I think, too, like Debbie said, you know, Jonathan was the all-American boy.
Oh,
you know,
beautiful.
Sports and
I just showed
friends.
You his picture. I wanted you to see who we were talking about. Handsome.
And I think sometimes when we talk about this stuff, if you don't have any experience with it, you think that you're dealing with the fragile eggs of society, that they mm-hmm. can't handle it. And that's not the case. It affects everybody.
It you know, I had a woman call me one time. She said, my husband is 6'4", a farmer, and this has broken him. He would just sit and cry. So it doesn't matter if it's a, you know, a small little petite woman, a big 6'4" guy. It affects everybody differently. Does everybody suffer horrendously from these drugs? No, but everybody needs to be informed about these drugs, because the end result, it's just a horrible journey to go through, and nobody should have to do it. All right. Well, Garrett, I want to thank you again for helping me do the podcast. You did a great job. Thank you.